permission, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Chief Justice Kinzer, may it please the Court, the key attribute of this case that should shape your decision-making is that Mrs. Settle comes to this Court armed with a jury verdict in her favor, a jury verdict that was approved by the trial judge. In those circumstances, the only basis that the law allows you to overturn it is if no reasonable jury could ever reach that verdict, or if there was no evidence supporting it. And in this case, the evidence was in dispute on every material issue in the case. The jury heard all that evidence, all of the arguments that are in the brief, all the factual representations that are in the briefs. The jury heard, assessed the witness's credibility and motive, and found that RGR was negligent, and also found that Mr. Settle was not contributory and negligent. After the trial, RGR filed a post-trial motion to overturn the verdict, and Judge O'Brien, who had seen all the evidence and heard all the legal issues before, ruled against them. In these circumstances, I respectfully submit to this Court that it would be an undermining of Mrs. Settle's right to a jury trial and would be a fundamental miscarriage of justice for this Court to overturn the judgment of the jury and to overturn the judgment of the trial judge.
Counsel, can we talk about duty in this case, whether there's a legal duty? Because you would agree, I believe, that despite what you just told me, if there's no legal duty, then this Court has not only the obligation to set aside this verdict. So let's talk about duty for a minute. As I understand this case, it came teed up to the Court originally as joint responsibility between the railroad and RGR for the fact that RGR's lumber was on the right-of-way. And that's how the case was going to be tried, how there's a sort of a joint responsibility. And at some point in time, the railroad settled and got out of the case. And then the case went forward, as I understand, as premises liability. Now, as I understand it, the property that you allege was the proximate cause of this injury, and based upon the duty of RGR, was not on their own property. It was on, in fact, the right-of-way. So can you tell me what our law says about the duty of a landowner to put property on adjacent property? What duty does he have to somebody else on this other side of the property?
Your Honor, yes, I can. But first, I would like to correct two premises.
Sure, go ahead.
In your question. First of all, the allegations against the two defendants were joint and several liabilities.
Right.
So it wasn't like it was a conspiracy or anything like that.
Right.
Second of all, it was not tried as a premises liability case. The duty that we claim here is a basic one. As the Fourth Circuit put it, a person who creates a reasonable risk of foreseeable harm to others is under a duty to exercise reasonable care to prevent the threatened harm.
Okay, let me stop you right there.
Yes, sir.
Then you're saying that if I parked my car in that right-of-way and I had a big car that blocked the line of sight, I would have a duty under these same circumstances. Is that an analogous?
I think the answer is yes, and the reason why that is because another basic principle of tort law applies. And I didn't say you would be liable, I said you might be liable.
Okay.
And that is because tort law cabins liability by the concept of foreseeability.
Okay, let's talk about that. Good. I want to hear about that.
Okay, so, and that is, would reasonably prudent person in that circumstance foresee that act could cause injury to someone else? If so, then that person has the duty to exercise reasonable care to prevent that injury from happening.
Okay.
Does foreseeability come with the duty question, or does it come with the breach question?
I'm sorry?
Does the item of foreseeability play a part in whether there's a legal duty or whether the duty has been breached?
Well, I think it is duty, Your Honor, because unless you could say that a reasonable person would foresee that I'm causing a danger, you wouldn't have a duty to undertake reasonable care to prevent the danger from occurring. So
what is the evidence that I would have parking my car there that I would see it was foreseeable that there'd be a problem at that intersection as the adjacent to private road went by?
Well, the standard, again, is foreseeable in the circumstances. Reasonable care is reasonable care in the circumstances. So it could vary in many respects. It could vary with the time of day. For example, if it's nighttime, your car is parked there, blocks the view.
Let's go past hypothetical. What about this case? What evidence there was in this case that it was foreseeable for RGR to know about a line-of-sight violation or problem by them putting their lumber on the right-of-way?
There was plenty of it, Your Honor.
Tell me.
First of all, the physical scene, it was apparent that it blocked the right-of-way. The owner testified that it that the lumber stack needlessly interfered.
What does that mean now? That means it made it. Does that mean it made it dangerous? It means it interfered. But what does that mean? Does that mean it's foreseeable that it's going to be an accident there, or does it just mean that it's a little bit less vision than I thought than there would have been if I wasn't there?
Well, I think you're right.
It was very carefully worded, both the question and the answer that was in the record.
Well, I think the answer is simply, Your Honor, this, that we know, as all your cases have said, is that a railroad crossing in itself is a place of danger. So we have that circumstance. We have the circumstance that the owner says this would needlessly interfere with visibility. Visibility, if it interfered with visibility 5 miles away, it wouldn't matter. But it was not only close to the track, but as Your Honor mentioned, it was in the right-of-way. And there was also evidence that undisputed evidence, that one of the primary purposes of that right-of-way is as a safety zone. So the facts that the jury had were the lumber blocks visibility, it's in the safety zone. The owner admitted knowing what a right-of-way was for, where the right-of-way was, and that it needlessly interfered not only with sight, but Your Honor, you're obviously familiar with the transcript, the ability of the driver to perceive and to react. So that was just that is the basic evidence that was there.
Under your theory of this case and the question of duty, if I own a piece of property, it's in my residence, and I put up a 10-foot-high brick wall to the exact points on the perimeter of my property, I may very well be liable civilly to someone who's driving an automobile off of my property on a private road or a public road because of that 10-foot wall. Now, I don't see that as being the law of the Commonwealth.
Well, Your Honor, the question really would be based on what the circumstances were there. I mean, I think that really is the law. It's not like
wouldn't then what you're saying that I could actually be liable to a driver who is on the street next to my house for a wall that I built legally on my property.
Yes, it is a possibility. But Your Honor, we have other cases where there are obstructions, where the obstructions are there legally. In the Payne case, the Campbell case, there's a freight depot. There's nothing improper in itself about those obstructions. One case that is not a Virginia case, but it is almost on all fours on the facts of this case, is a case from the Seventh Circuit recently, and Judge Posner wrote the opinion. It's Justice versus CS Transportation at 908 F. 2nd 119. And there you had, again, rail cars, you had someone who'd been over the area before, no notice in terms of sound and so forth. But again, it depends upon the circumstances, Your Honor. And yes, in the hypothetical you said, it is possible, it seems rare, frankly, as a factual matter, that could be. But if you block someone's vision at an intersection, it's possible that you could be liable if they're injured. That doesn't seem like an outrageous proposition to me, Your Honor.
It does to me. Well, I don't mind telling you. I built a wall on my property from point to point to point to point, and a stranger has a cause of action against me for building a wall on my property?
Your Honor, actually, your Klein case, I think, answers your point directly. And if I may just quote one sentence from your opinion in Klein. As you know, there, you said that someone doesn't have a duty to inspect to see if there's dead trees around the wall and people and so forth. But the majority opinion was very careful to say the duty owed by adjoining property owners is to refrain from engaging in any act that makes the highway more dangerous than in the state of nature or in the state in which it had been left. And, Your Honor, if you build that wall...
Well, Klein had to do with a tree that fell on the highway.
Right.
We're talking about something that's entirely contained within the perimeters of my property.
But Klein articulated the duty that did said there was no duty to deal with that tree. But Klein was very careful to say that a property owner does have a duty not to affirmatively engage in acts that would endanger people on the public way. And that's I think that applies directly here. It said any act, it did refer, in fact, it was specifically talking about affirmative acts, so it wasn't just conditions on the land. So, Your Honor, I think that it would fit your situation.
Let me ask you with regard to the jury instruction here, because the jury instruction here that's being challenged goes to the duty question. And as I recall, it was based upon really the language in the Rice case. I mean, I'm not quoting exactly verbatim the jury instruction. But in Rice, we said that the common law imposes upon every person the duty to exercise ordinary care in the use and maintenance of his property to prevent injuries to others. And that's essentially what the trial court instructed the jury as to the duty in this case.
Yes,
is that correct?
Okay. That's language exactly from Rice.
So, is that the answer to the hypotheticals that are being posed to you? Not the question of duty, because duty can't exist or not exist based upon the egregiousness of the circumstance. But there's a general principle of duty, and then you look at the specific facts of a case and say, did this conduct breach this duty? And so did the conduct create an unreasonable risk of harm that was foreseeable? And that's a breach question, not a duty question.
Yes, Your Honor, I think that's correct. I think that there are situations, though, where you can say that foreseeability does impact duty, but I would certainly agree with what you say, that, for example, the proposition that I quoted the Fourth Circuit on, that you have a danger, you have a duty not to endanger others and so forth, that's the duty, but then the
question, that's just a general common law principle.
Yes, and then do you breach it by your conduct? So I agree. And that is an answer to your question, though.
To put it in a different context, the farmer that has a field and wants to plant corn to the corner can't do it.
Well, that's not necessarily true, Your Honor.
He may very well be liable, according to you.
Well, let's put it this way. I've lived most of my life earlier in areas where there are farms, and most people don't plant corn
it's
right
not
under
a,
the road.
It's not a matter of most people don't. The question is, if they do, are they potentially civilly liable to a driver on a roadway that's next to his farm?
If the circumstances in that particular case are that the corn blocked vision of the driver, and so the driver couldn't exercise reasonable care, the jury can consider that and possibly find the person liable. Yes.
Well, at least it's clear.
Well, I think that's what your cases say. I think there's a case. Now, part of the reason why I say that as a matter of practice, I don't think that's necessarily the problem, is because even at least in rural areas in Illinois, where I come from, there are setback rules and people can plant crops right up to the right of way and so forth. And so I think part of the acknowledgement of the dangerousness of blocking the view is often manifested in local ordinances and so forth.
That's not an issue here.
I know, Your Honor, but I'm just saying, though,
the cases that we see here about a duty have to do almost exclusively, I can tell, with things that happen off of the property. A tree falls from the property off of the property. Somebody has a drainage ditch on their property and it's improperly done and it brings soil and rocks and all kinds of other things onto somebody else's property. This case is different because what you're suggesting is that a duty exists for me to use my property in such a way that's not actually harming anybody else's property, and it's not falling on a road. It's obviously a vision problem, but it seems to me that you can't put that duty on the landowner not to be able to use his property in a manner in which he chooses to use it when it's not directly affecting other property.
Well, Your Honor, the question is not under the principles of tort law whether it's affecting the property. It's whether it's endangering other people. And here, if this stack of lumber weren't there, we wouldn't be here. A stack of lumber was a proximate cause of the death of Charles Settle. It also is not just on RGR's property. Remember, they not only trespassed, but they trespassed on property that was intended to be a safety zone.
You see, if you're right, then that Klein case should have been decided differently.
Well, you thought so, Your Honor. I realized.
I did. I dissented in it.
Counsel, you mentioned the safety zone. Is there significance to the fact that it is in the right-of-way? Is there significance to the fact that it is piled in the right-of-way?
I think so, because I don't, you know, the discussion that Justice Lemons and I have been having, I think is important, but I don't think you have to go that far. I think in terms of what this case is about, it is egregious that someone would put such a dangerous obstruction in what is intended to be a safety zone. And at the very least, I think as a matter of the policy and the concern of keeping people safe near railroads, that that safety zone has to be protected and preserved.
But isn't it the duty of the railroad to keep the right-of-way clear?
It does have a duty.
Isn't that the way it would work, is that if it's in the right-of-way, then it's the railroad's responsibility to say, get out of my right-of-way because people need to be able to see.
Well, it's...
And we put a duty on them to make sure that it's clear.
There is a duty on the part of the railroad, but there is also a duty on the part of the person who created the obstruction. And as you know, we did sue the railroad, and they settled, and people testified that he wasn't aware of this obstruction. But you're right, Your Honor. That's absolutely true, which is why I think they settled. I've run out of
time. Your time's expired. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, good morning. My name is Robert Lofton from McGuire Woods. With me this morning are my colleagues, Tracy Walker and Jenny Bondurant, and trial counsel Chuck Williams.
Let's start where we left off with the appellant. I read language out of the Rice case, and it's pretty much the language that was used in the jury instruction here that defines the common law of duty. What's wrong with that?
I'm sorry?
What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with the instruction?
Well, and the common law duty that was applied in this case.
There is no such duty that's ever been recognized by this court in the Commonwealth of Virginia that requires RGR or similarly situated defendants to protect sight lines on private property for third parties on adjacent private property.
So you would say that there is no duty to not obstruct sight lines on private property for people that are off the property. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So when we define a duty so narrowly and the non-existence of the duty so narrowly, then doesn't that mean that no matter how egregious the conduct on the private property and how dangerous the intersection might be otherwise, that there can never be any liability because there's no duty, because we've defined duty so narrowly?
Yes, in the context of this case, yes, Your Honor.
But when you say duty, it has to apply. You can't create duties based upon facts of specific cases. The duty has to be a general proposition of common law, which we articulated in the Rice case and was the jury instruction in this case. And then that applies in all situations. And then whether there's a breach depends upon the conduct at issue. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would, Chief Justice.
So what was wrong with the duty question that was articulated to the jury in this case?
Well, in terms of the Instruction 11B, which is the instruction you're referring to, this Court has never recognized such a duty.
Who recognized it in Rice?
Well, in Rice...
And other cases, I think it's Standard Oil or something like that.
Yes, ma'am. The State of Wakefield.
Right.
The Court has articulated that as a general proposition. But in articulating a duty, the context is key.
No, the context is key in terms of whether there's a breach.
We
have a general principle that says the common law imposes upon every person the duty to exercise ordinary care in the use and maintenance of his property. And then in this case, or any other case that you might pose, the question then becomes, did you breach that duty? Did your conduct, in this case, by placing lumber that close to the railroad in the safety zone and the right-of-way that we know blocked the sight line of this one-lane right-of-way that went across it, did that breach? Did it create an unreasonable risk of harm that was foreseeable by the alleged tortfeasor? That's the breach question. That's not the duty question.
Well, there is a breach question, Chief Justice Kinzer, but I would say there's also a duty question. This Court has never said... In terms of articulating the duty, you have to look at the relationship between the parties. This Court has never said that a private property owner or tenant, in this case RGR, has a duty to a third party who's traveling on a private road on adjacent property.
Have we ever said that they didn't?
No.
Is there a case that says that they did not? And so if, as the Chief Justice says, the basic principle is the duty of every man to use his own property as not to injure the person or property of another, that's the jury instruction. Why isn't it up to the jury under the facts of this case to determine whether that duty was breached?
Well, I would say fundamentally, Your Honor, the question should have never gone to the jury because this court has never recognized a duty owed by RGR to someone like Mr. Settle in the posture that he was in, traveling on a private road.
But you've also told me we don't have a case that goes the other way. So the only thing
right.
that you can say is the issue has never come before the court.
Correct, Your
Honor. Now that it is before the court, if Standard Oil sets forth the duty that we've all agreed is the duty, why isn't it then the jury's job to determine whether this lumber pile in this right-of-way violated that duty?
Well, initially I would say whether such a duty exists is a question of law that the trial court should have answered and that this court should answer.
And
it has never been affirmatively addressed one way or another. So this court should articulate in resolving this case whether whether someone in the posture of RGR or in the hypothetical Justice Lemon's pose owes a duty to the third party traveling on a private road. Such a duty has never been articulated. But assuming that such a duty exists, here the jury verdict was error because there was no notice there was no evidence of any notice by RGR.
But you're slipping over into premises liability. They've always maintained that this was not a premises liability case. Isn't that correct?
Well, they have maintained that they have imported premises liability concepts, I think, quite liberally throughout the trial proceedings and on appeal. But the concepts of notice apply whether it's a premises liability case or a tort case. If you look at O'Neill...
That's the foreseeability question. That's the foreseeability question that goes into the breach.
Or, as opposing counsel says, goes into whether or not there's a duty.
I think the foreseeability question or the notice question goes both to duty and to breach. If you look at O'Neill in 1916 or Overstreet in 1927 or Rice in 1950 or Ritter in 1959 or even Klein in 2012, this court has discussed foreseeability and notice in the context of both duty and breach. So I think it applies in both, Your Honor.
Okay. I want to go back to the common law of duty principle that was articulated in Rice and some other cases, that you owe this duty to use and maintain your property to not prevent injury to others. Explain to me why that general principle and that general common law duty that has been articulated by this court does not fit this case. We have the use and maintenance of the property, and the duty is not to prevent injury to others. The others isn't restricted to people on the property.
Rice is distinguishable on a couple of
That's the cow that got off the property case.
Yes,
but the general common law duty that was articulated there.
Right, and in that case, Chief Justice Kinzer, the cow got loose and was traveling down a public highway.
Right, I'm very familiar with the facts.
Right.
Yeah, you can't argue cows with the Chief Justice.
No, I will not argue cows with the Chief Justice. I think that's very important, though, Chief Justice Kinzer, because there you're talking about public highway. And in the cases where this generalized or this general duty to mankind, as it has been called in some cases, has been articulated, it's always been in the context of a public road.
So are you saying there's no duty here because this was not a public road?
Yes. There's this court, to go back to Justice Powell's question, this court has never recognized a duty in the context of private road and a passive, at best, a passive obstruction on adjacent private.
So if this were property. A public highway, would there be a duty here for RGR? The very same facts, except it's a public highway.
Based on Klein, no, Your Honor.
Klein talked about natural conditions. Nobody
right.
can argue that this is a natural condition here. It's artificial.
Right. Well, correct. And Klein talked about natural conditions. But also, if you look at Sugarland, Sugarland was a proximate cause case.
It was a proximate cause case. It didn't go to duty.
I'm sorry?
Sugarland's not about duty.
No, it's not. So
I'm talking about duty. Let's not get off in proximate cause yet.
Okay.
So is your answer to my question that if this were a public highway, RGR would have had the duty?
No.
Why not?
Because, again, it's a passive obstruction on two pieces of private property. And to go to the point Justice Goodwin made, at best, this is a dispute between Norfolk Southern and RGR. And Norfolk Southern had the duty, as the owner of the right-of-way, to ensure that it was clear. And there was affirmative testimony below by the Norfolk Southern track inspector that he saw the lumber pile and that he never viewed it as an obstruction or a danger at the crossing.
So your position would be that even if this were a public road, and no matter how egregious the conduct on the private property that never encroaches upon the public road, that there's never a duty?
This court has never recognized.
But I'm asking you what your position is.
Yes, that is my position, Chief Justice.
All right.
That private property owners
can do whatever.
As a matter of common law, yes, Chief Justice. Thank you.
All right.
Let me draw your attention to Instruction 11B, which is page 171 of the Joint Appendix.
Yes, Justice Mendes.
One sentence. Every person has the duty to exercise ordinary care in the use and maintenance of its property to prevent injury or death to others, and it, of course, relies upon rights.
Right.
Would you, is it your position that a proper instruction would have been worded differently, or is it your position that there's this no duty instruction for this defendant that should have been granted and therefore matter shouldn't have gone to the jury in the first place?
The latter, Justice Mendes. This matter should have never gone to the jury because a duty owed by RGR to Mr. Settle has never been recognized by this court.
Well, I guess that's probably correct. I think I agree with you. The Restatement of Torts, 364, states, a possessor of land is subject to liability to others outside of the land for physical harm caused by a structure or other artificial condition on the land, which the possessor realizes or should realize will involve an unreasonable risk of such harm. We haven't adopted Restatement of Torts 364, but the question is here whether we should. So, I mean, I don't think we should. That's pretty clear from my questions. But you need to understand that's still an open issue in this case.
Yes, Justice Clemens, I do understand that that's an open issue. And I would say this court should not adopt Restatement 364 under the facts of this case when you have a passive obstruction on private property that is between two different parcels of private property.
That's not a reason not to adopt it, because this 364 exactly fits this case. So there has to be other reasons not to adopt this section of the restatement than the particular facts of this case. So what are they?
I think practically, if this court adopted 364 as the law of the Commonwealth of Virginia, it, to go back to the questions that Justice Millett and Justice Lemons asked the counsel for Mrs. Settle, it is potentially unencumbered liability on private property owners throughout the Commonwealth of Virginia. Whether they're farmers, whether they're residential areas or industrial areas, Restatement 364 is unlimited in how it could potentially apply.
Well, this is just the duty question. You've always got the separate issue of breach.
You could win a lawsuit. You get sued. You might win, depending on the jury.
Let me ask you about foreseeability. Could you respond to the appellee's position on foreseeability?
Well, I think, in terms of the evidence at trial, it was undisputed that RGR had no notice that it was not foreseeable that RGR would know that the lumber pile that was 7 feet inside the Norfolk Southern right-of-way posed any danger or hindrance to people using the private property.
The only thing I could find was the comment by the representative of RGR that said it was needlessly blocking the way or something like that.
Yes, Justice Millett. And counsel for Mrs. Settle has several times taken that quote out of context. And if you look at appendix page 537, counsel for Mrs. Settle asked Mr. Frogel, who's one of the owners of RGR, and you now know that you were 7 feet inside the right-of-way. I know now, yes. So that is exactly the type of after-the-fact hindsight statement that this court rejected in Rice as the basis for finding either a duty or a breach, depending, Chief Justice Kinzer, on how you want to look at the foreseeability and the notice analysis, because I think you can go with both.
We'll finish up. What's your best argument that it was not foreseeable for RGR to know that this was a danger?
Well, Justice Mullen, the lumber was there. There was evidence at trial. The lumber was there. This accident occurred in October 2004. An awful southern engineer testified that he had seen it there since 2000, had not deemed it to be a hazard or a danger. Mr. Humphreys, who owned a business across the railroad tracks, had been there for 12 years. The lumber piles had been there the entire time. He had been there, had never complained to RGR, never put RGR on notice that the lumber in any way impeded or view while using the private crossing or caused problems. There was no evidence at trial that RGR used the private crossing or had any reason to go down the private crossing to even learn or ascertain that the lumber posed any threat. So Justice Millett, under all of the evidence, was undisputed that RGR did not know that the lumber pile was in the right-of-way and did not know that it posed any danger or difficulty to travel if he was attempting to use the private crossing.
Well, in your view, is it actually new or should have known?
Well, if the court adopted Section 364, the restatement, it would be actual or constructive notice. And so, but under either analysis, RGR did not know. They did not have actual knowledge. The evidence at trial was very clear on that. And there's no basis for RGR to have constructive notice either, because they never used, there was no evidence that they used the private crossing. And everyone that was asked testified that they never complained to RGR or put RGR on notice that the lumber posed any.
Should his statement of needlessly blocking the view have been a question to go to the jury as to whether he knew or should have known? Should that testimony that it needlessly blocked the view, should that have been an issue that went to the jury as to whether he knew or should have known?
No, because this court has not adopted Section 64 of the restatement. But if the court does adopt it, and I would ask the court to remand this case for a new trial. But I think under the facts of this case and the evidence that's before you, based on our briefing, there was no duty that was owed by RGR, and the judgment of the trial court should be reversed and final judgment should be entered for RGR.
All right. Your time's expired. Thank you.
Thank you.
The court will take a short recess.